This is CFRA Live on News Talk 580 CFRA.
In some places, the shelves already show those units receive. In other places, it might take an additional day or so.
That is the Health Minister Jean-Yves Duclos speaking yesterday, telling parents relief is on the way, that we are going to see the supply of children's pain medication, pain and fever medication, arriving in Canada. The next 3 weeks, we are getting more through foreign imports. Apparently, they say 1 million bottles of the medication have already arrived this week. I put that to you and I asked you on the show, have you seen it? Where did you see it? Here are a couple of tips I can pass on. Sandra says, Christy, children's Tylenol was available yesterday at Walmart on Baseline. Another texter, no name on this, says Costco, Blair Road, 2 to 11 years old, liquid. People are exchanging tips like this on social media, and some people, like Melanie Parody, are driving to the United States. She's been impacted by this shortage. I chatted with her earlier this month, and she told me she drove down to upstate New York.
I'm safeguarding it. I'm going to buy a gun safe to protect it from others, from intruders. So, I mean, we stocked up when we went to the States. We also bought additional supply that we mailed out to 8 different families across the country. Friends of ours who had put their hand up and said, like, hey, if you're going and you can get some, please send it to us. And we did. I know lots of people who've done the same thing.
Joining us now from the Ontario Pharmacy Association, Justin Bates. Good morning.
Good Saturday morning.
Some welcome news, finally.
It is, but the fact that we are importing products that are not yet approved for sale in Canada really demonstrates an abject failure in our domestic supply chain, and the fact that we haven't been able to address some of those core challenges suggests that we're not out of the woods yet and that we're going to have to continue to look at mitigating strategies to ration the supply and make sure that we continue to see product availability throughout the winter.
Why don't we have any, but the United States is fine?
It's really peculiar, and I hear all the stories as well of people driving over the border, and you know, pharmacists there are perplexed because they have lots of supply on the shelves. You know, what we do know is that we did see an unprecedented spike in demand back in the late summer, approximately 300% over this time last year. And that led to some of the challenges that we've had because the manufacturers here couldn't keep pace with that, even though they have increased their production by 35%, which is a record. And they typically look at forecasting out over several years and average consumption rates. So we don't have any flexibility built into our supply chain that can deal with these fluctuations in demand. And then we find ourselves in these situations. And I think there was some panic buying as well. When word started to leak out in the summer, people started to buy more than perhaps what they needed, and that just exasperated the shortage that we see today.
How much of this do you think was actual demand, people who were sick who needed it, versus stockpiling? Do you know?
Well, we don't have any data, so it would be conjecture, I think, more educated guesses. But I think there's a combination of things that happened here. One, we saw more respiratory illnesses and colds that we wouldn't typically see in the summer months, and it was much earlier than it ever has been. So because partly people were, you know, congregating more, public health restrictions were lifted, and that created, I think, a bit of a perfect storm. People needed to have these medications. Plus, don't forget that we had a backlog of surgeries. And often this is the medication hospitals use post-operation to deal with pain. So they're both pain and fever medications. If you have a cold, COVID is still outbreak in many communities. You know, typically you get a fever. So you need these types of medications to help manage the symptoms. And I think that, combined with the fact that people were panic buying, created this scenario where we saw that massive increase in demand.
It has a ripple effect on our hospitals, though, because they're already overburdened. The staff are already burnt out. We already have an overflowing ICU to the point where they opened a second one, and the emergency room is jammed with parents and kids. Like this mother, for example, Justin, who I saw on Facebook this morning, posting, my son has a fever of 103. I can't find any children's Advil or Tylenol. If she doesn't find it, she may well end up at CHEO.
And that is exactly the challenge we have with the burden on the healthcare system. You know, any service you can't find or medication, and we're hearing about challenges now and back orders of children's amoxicillin, is just going to continue to increase the challenges we have to be able to service and provide healthcare to Canadians. And where do people go, right? If they can't get the medication, they typically go to an emergency department, where they're dealing with the rush of people who have various ailments, including COVID. So it does create that bottleneck. And, you know, it's not a place that Canada should be in, you know, in 2022, when we think about the fact that we're a developed nation and yet we can't get simple access to simple medications. Something has to be done from a broader healthcare policy perspective to create more incentives for the manufacturers to have plants in Canada, produce it in Canada, therefore we would have more supply and flexibility, because much of our medication, and there's 800 drug shortages on the Health Canada website, and 23 of those are critical, mostly prescription-based, but most of those products are manufactured outside of Canada. They source the active product ingredients, they produce it, and then they bring it into Canada, because the cost structure here is such that it's essentially an impediment, a barrier to entry. We see that with generic medications. We see it with brand innovative medications. So we have to figure out what kind of healthcare system we want, and that requires investments.
You said we need to be wise with the supply that comes in now. Are you advising pharmacies in Ontario to limit bottles and boxes of children's pain medication?
We are. One of the recommendations we have, and it is a recommendation, it's not mandatory, because these are products that are essentially unscheduled, so they can be sold over the counter in shelves or in gas stations, etc. And the challenge we're going to have is if we just put it out on the shelf, people might buy two or three bottles per customer. And if that happens, then, you know, with the tentative supply we do have, even with the million that are coming up, that's not going to last long. I mean, a million is going to be some for community, some prioritized for hospital, is weeks of supply, not months. So in that case, we should probably put these products behind the counter, which is a bit of an inconvenience for patients, but at the very minimum, they can talk to the pharmacist and we can ration it one per customer so that we make sure that there's enough to go around for the people that need it.
And is that your suggestion, one per customer?
It is, yeah. I mean, these have expiry dates as well, and I know there's a secondary market out there. We've heard the stories of some of the gouging, price gouging. And, you know, I'd always tell people, be very cautious in what you're buying if you're not buying it from a reputable retailer, especially on the, you know, Amazon and other online outlets, that if any time you see the seal is broken, and that's true in any case for a medication, never use it and always check the expiration date.
What is the stuff that's being sold if it's a hoax?
Well, it may not be a hoax. It could be tampered.
It just might be opened?
Yeah, exactly. And it's unfortunate, and it's a small cohort of people that are bad actors, but it does happen. And so you just want to be very careful. You want to make sure it has the appropriate drug information. So a drug information number, identification number, called a DIN, that it's approved, and it's not a knockoff. But more importantly would be the checking the seal and expiration date. And, you know, unfortunately, that we've seen some of that.
You've heard about that, people going on Amazon or Facebook Marketplace, and they find that they're getting a bottle of something that's been opened.
Yeah, it has happened. I wouldn't say it's widespread, but there have been, you know, anecdotal reports of that. And so it's a public service announcement, more or less, to make sure that people are very diligent when they're buying products. Excuse me. In secondary markets. And it's unfortunate. People take advantage of situations when demand is high and supply is low of any product. But when you're dealing with a sick child, you know, it just increases that scrutiny that needs to be placed.
What do they do with the labels if we're importing these and the regulations by Health Canada require that the label is in both English and French?
There's a few things with the labeling that create some challenges for the Canadian market. So typically what happens is the product goes through a regulatory process to get approval, and it's assigned a drug identification number. The FDA assigns a similar number in the U.S. called an NDC. So most of these products will have an NDC number. The other piece will be, so you need an exemption to be able to do that for sale in Canada, which the government has granted. The bilingual part is important, so English and French, but also the concentration is different in some of these formulations from Australia and the US. So the, you know, how you dose and how much you give your child is really important. So, you know, that can change based on where it's manufactured. And then just the drug facts, you know, the warnings and cautions, those types of things are slightly different between Canada and the U.S. But I would say that, you know, if it's safe for kids in Australia and the U.S., it will be safe. It's just to pay attention to those things. So the manufacturers here, companies like Johnson & Johnson, they're putting either product inserts into the box, or they're putting a sticker on it in many of the instances, so that it kind of converts all of that to the Canadian metric system and provides the information that patients need.
You said this new supply, good, but it won't last long. It's weeks of supply, not months. What then are you looking for from the government in Canada?
Well, I think there's two things. One, we have to continue sourcing products so that we have more coming in. A million is great, but we need you know, several more million to be able to meet the demand. Given the fact that we're expecting a very severe and now early flu season, respiratory illnesses, which often require things like Tylenol and Advil to manage the symptoms of a fever. And then I think we need to, you know, work very closely with the manufacturers here to continue to ramp up production. And we are seeing some replenishment. You know, some stores, it's not consistent, have supply. It doesn't last long. But, you know, we are seeing some improvement. And, you know, we've heard from the manufacturers that the supply coming in that has been announced for the 1 million packages will actually be available in some stores starting now. So this weekend and heading into next week. So people should start to see more product available. And if we can continue to bring in more, encourage manufacturers to produce more, you know, play this catch up and ration the product supply, you know, limiting it to one per customer, we should be able to at least stabilize the situation.
So to the parents that are eagerly listening right now, hanging on your every word, Justin, if they haven't seen any at their pharmacy, keep looking. Hopefully we'll see a difference by the end of this weekend or today.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there's a website, Tylenol.ca, that gives you a lot of information about what the products are, what's coming in. And parents can go there to get more information. Health Canada also has a portal that they have developed to share information. But I do expect we'll start to see more supply on shelves shortly.
But what's fascinating and not surprising is that while there are those official tools available, there's lots of informal networks. And even people like Melanie Parody, the parent who joined me, she joked that she felt like a drug mule going down to the United States and then bringing back Tylenol and then sending it to friends and family across the country who needed it.
Yeah, and I wouldn't necessarily encourage that. That's actually not allowed. So, you know, yeah, I understand why people are doing it.
I mean, it is happening, though. It is happening.
It is absolutely happening, and people are desperate. They go to, you know, where they can find the supply, so it's certainly understandable. But, yeah, I think that just the fact that we have to do that speaks to the severity of the issue, and as Canadians, we shouldn't accept that. We need to challenge our policymakers and thinking about our domestic supply chain and where the vulnerabilities are. I mean, we've seen this throughout the pandemic, whether it was PPE or other products, that we've been in a state of shortage or don't have the domestic capacity. And when it hits prescription and over-the-counter medications, it really affects people. And that's why we're seeing so much emphasis on the need to come up with solutions.
Justin Bates, thank you so much for sparing this time, especially on a weekend morning. Greatly appreciate it.
My pleasure. Take care.
Justin Bates with the Ontario Pharmacy Association. 1020, you're listening to CFRA Live. Warming up out there. Looks like it's 4 degrees now. The sun is up. But it is mainly cloudy. Still, nice high of 7 today. We'll be right back.
You're listening to CFRA Live on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Welcome back. been a pleasure hanging out with you this morning. Let's talk about the school board. School boards should be able to meet, to debate, to make decisions on education. And they did that this week. They had a contentious motion. Should masking be a rule for the people that work in the schools and the students? Should it be mandatory? You'll remember last spring when the Ontario government lifted their masking mandate for most public spaces, including the classroom, OCDSB, Ottawa's largest school board, they did their own thing where they passed a motion saying, no, no, keep wearing the masks. Let's keep the masks on. The thing about that is there's been some back and forth over whether or not they even have the authority to do that. So if you talk to the province says, no, that's Ottawa Public Health, not the school board's job. The province was very firm on that. But Lyra Evans, who's the chair of the board, has told me on the air, actually, we had our own consultation and we went and talked legally to lawyers and got advice and we believe that we can do it. So that was one thing. Can you even do this to begin with? How do you enforce it? Can you enforce it? And then does it even matter? Because in the end, the motion was, I think, exceptionally watered down. They were trying to get to a point where there was a bit of compromise because so many people were against it and so many people were for it. The school boards had to hear these public submissions and they were trying to find a way to essentially meet in the middle, find some middle ground, some common ground. Very difficult, very difficult. In the end, it did not go through. It was a tie. It was 6-6, which means that it failed. So the policy does not go through. Six trustees voted in favor, six against. This is the reintroduction of this motion. Because earlier in the week on Tuesday, they had to shut it down. People were heckling. People were yelling. People were talking over those who were making submissions. And eventually the police were called in to disperse the crowd. And the special meeting to talk about mandatory masking was only virtual. Disappointing behavior. I want to play this clip here. This is of Lyra Evans. We'll skip ahead, Stephen, to Lyra Evans, who is a trustee. She's the chair of the board. She spoke with me yesterday and she told me, they have never seen anything like this.
I have not, until now, experienced such a pushback towards this kind of suggestion.
She said they get emails routinely from people. Some of them are just a person expressing their position. Some of them are from people sharing conspiracies. But she says they've been able to band together to challenge public health.
A number of the emails that I received alleged conspiracies about vaccines, about masks. They sent emails claiming that masks didn't work. And I think those people organized or remained mobilized in a way that sort of allowed them to show up in large numbers.
It was a packed meeting room. Did you see that, Ellsworth? On Tuesday night, there were about 150 people that attended in person.
Yeah, pretty crazy.
Some masked, some not. Parents who supported it, parents who did not support it. And I thought that was really great that the parents were able to come. They were able to either support or to object to masking. That is their right. But you know what is not their right? To jeer, to yell over those who are speaking. Like the person from CHEO and the trustees. And people were chanting freedom and shame and singing O Canada. And eventually, Evans told me the disruptions were so severe, it was virtually impossible to have a discussion about the subject.
We cannot make decisions if the meeting is in chaos. There were a number of point of personal privilege, point of order motions that had to be raised at the meeting because trustees literally couldn't hear the people who were supposed to be speaking. Because of the noise from the audience.
So now what? For future meetings, there hasn't been any proposals for how to change meetings and how they're run. And the practice at the Ottawa-Carleton District School Board is to do this in person. I very much support that. I think it's really important and powerful for people to show up and have their say. But I do wonder, if we have this level of disruption, Do they have to look at changing this? I don't want them to. You can have me here on record saying that. I don't want for people to have to tune in from home. I think it's great because people can. If you work late, okay, I can't make it to the board meeting in person, but I can make my dinner and I can get my kids to bed and I can watch from home. And even though this meeting goes till 10:30 at night, I can watch from the comfort of my own computer screen. But we should still have the ability for people to be there in person. Don't you think? You let me know on the text board. Nothing has been proposed, but I do think there is a level of concern about this. These disruption tactics, the way that people were able to hijack the meeting. How do we prevent that in the future? Somebody on the text board said, well, maybe you have to put them in a different room. As in, you have people that come to watch and witness the meeting, but they're not actually in the room. So if there's disruption, well, the trustees can keep going. They're not being talked over. 10:30, your news is coming up.
Listening to CFRA Live on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Told us that the waiting time will be around 14 hours. It's hard to see your kids like that.
For the first time ever, I saw just like complete fear in her eyes because Chloe's usually a soldier. Like
she's a warrior.
She's a warrior. She overcomes everything.
That is Jeffrey Dion and Christine Clemeno, the parents of 2-year-old Chloe, who was rushed to CHEO and their emergency earlier this month with RSV. Unfortunately, that's one of many personal stories that we featured. We had one of our regular listeners, Sephora, on our show last week. She was talking about her little baby had RSV, or they didn't actually know if it was RSV or COVID when she rushed into the hospital. But her 4-month-old had to be put into one of the resuscitation rooms, and it was very scary, very traumatic. They're doing okay now. We hear this over and over, and this is because the number of respiratory-related ER visits is much higher than normal this year. We hear about RSV in children, but it's not actually a disease that is exclusive to young kids. Dr. Isaac Bogosh joins us again on the show, infectious disease physician at Toronto General Hospital. Thank you for coming on, doctor. It's been a minute.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me back on. Always nice to chat.
Adults can get RSV too?
Oh, we sure can. And sometimes the conversation, you know, rightfully focuses on kids because we've seen how tough it's been and how challenging it's been in the pediatric hospitals. And, you know, pediatricians and family physicians have known about RSV in kids since the dawn of time because it's a very common reason for kids to seek medical care when they get infected with this. But it's not exclusively an infection of kids. It certainly can impact older populations. It can cause an identical syndrome to that of influenza. There's decades of papers and publications and studies demonstrating how RSV can be just as deadly as influenza in older populations. And, you know, it's something we certainly see in the adult hospitals as well.
How does it manifest in an adult? If I were to come down with RSV, what would my symptoms be?
I mean, let's just assume, rightly, that you're a healthy young adult. I mean, you could get a cough.
I am 32 and I am healthy, yes.
There we go. So, you know, pound for pound, you're going to do okay, right? You might feel crummy, you might have a cough, you might have a fever, and you'll recover. And sometimes wheezing is a prominent feature of RSV. But again, you're not going to be able to distinguish perfectly from one upper respiratory virus from another. The syndromes are overlapping. But in older populations, it can cause fever, cough, shortness of breath, a wheeze. And what brings people to hospital is usually difficulty breathing. Sometimes people require supplemental oxygen in hospital. Or they're feeling so crummy that they're not able to maintain their hydration and not able to care for themselves and are coming in to recover in hospital. And again, we see it. It's not infrequent. We see it during the winter months, around the exact same time that we see influenza.
This is an important story, though, because our hospitals, especially with children, are feeling the strain of RSV and flu cases. There is a lot that doctors are dealing with right now. I just had a family doctor on who said, we can't extend our hours anymore. We're burning out right now. Why do you think we're seeing so much RSV in kids?
I mean, there's theories, so I'm not going to speak with confidence on this. And there's a couple of theories. One of the theories is that there hasn't been the same degree of transmission of RSV and other respiratory viruses in the younger cohorts over the last couple of years, and it's coming back with a vengeance.
Is that the immunity debt theory?
Well, I hate that term because it depends on who you ask what the definition is. And so I'm not going to use that term because it gets defined differently by different people, and it's just not a good or accurate term. Mm-hmm. Another theory, too, is that, you know, could this be related to COVID, and has COVID somehow caused dysregulation of immune systems that might put some people at greater risk of more severe infection? Listen, we don't know. We don't know. But here's what we know. Number one, you can take steps to reduce your risk of infection by, good hand hygiene and putting on masks in indoor settings. It's not perfect, but of course, it can help reduce your risk. You can help by staying home if you're sick. Not everyone has that luxury. You can help by not needing to, or reducing the risk or chances of seeking health care by getting vaccinated for those that we have vaccines for, like influenza and COVID-19. So there are things that we do have under our control. One other point, I'm not sure how much time we have left. There are RSV vaccines in the pipeline, and there's been some tremendous research focusing on this really accelerating over the last decade. I wouldn't be surprised if we see these in the next year or so rolling out. It'll be a tremendous help to the pediatric world, but don't forget people on the older end of the spectrum. It'll also significantly help with those individuals as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but wiping down surfaces, washing your hands, always an important reminder, and I think people kind of tune out the minute you say that. But especially with RSV, it is more of a problem on surfaces, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, like, let's just be clear. We know that these viruses can transmit in many different ways. COVID is primarily transmitted through the air between people, usually in closer proximity to each other. But other viruses, including RSV, can be transmitted via surface. So, you know, while of course we've been focusing on masks over the last couple of years, you know, we don't live in a mono microbiologic world. Unfortunately, it's a poly microbiologic world. And I think there's multiple layers of protection that we can take to protect ourselves and reduce the frequency that we get these infections. And hand hygiene is certainly part of that now as well. So something to think about.
I can't even imagine the gnarly things I probably have on my hands after I take Ottawa's LRT train home from work. So I'll personally take that reminder. Thank you, Dr. Bogosh.
My pleasure. Have a great day.
Dr. Isaac Bogosh, infectious disease physician at Toronto General Hospital.
You are listening to CFRA Live on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Welcome back, CFRA Live. It is 10:49, getting warmer and warmer, 5 degrees out there. 10:50 now on the show. Mitch joins me in studio. Well, it's been quite the ride here. 5 hours. I could be at home in Oakville after that 5 hours of radio.
Could have watched almost both Godfather movies.
What else can you do in 5 hours? I could have flown to Vancouver. Mm-hmm. Depending on the winds. Okay. Because, you know, sometimes it's five and a half. Flight to Vancouver. Car ride to Toronto. I could have had some sort of a surgery. Depending on the kind. Actually, wait a second. Not in Ontario, because I wouldn't get in. It's true. It's very true. Elective surgeries have been impacted. Everything's been impacted. What the heck is going on with our healthcare system? What an embarrassment. Truly. Should we get to some of these text messages?
Oh, absolutely. There's some good ones.
Okay. So we call this what? The talk back segment?
Yeah.
Okay. Here we go. Let's get to it. I love this one. Did you see this from Kevin in Petawawa?
It's my favorite.
About the school board meeting. Some people have suggested maybe if you're going to try and guard against hecklers or disruption, at the school board meeting? Because, by the way, it's not just sensitivity. It's not just that people get offended. There are also strict time limits and there are time constraints. So if somebody's trying to do something and everybody's yelling over them, then you start to run up against the clock and then the meeting adjourns and you don't have time to accomplish anything. So some people were saying, put the hecklers or just put everybody, put the public viewing gallery, whatever you want to call it, in a separate room, and then they can watch on monitors. Okay, this is what Kevin says. Hi, Christy. The separate room idea for school board meeting, it reminds me of the room some churches have for parents with babies that start crying during Mass. They can go there and not disturb the service. Of course, the crying babies are probably brighter than some of those at the school board meeting. That's pretty good. What else do we have, Mitch?
There's a lot. Trying to see which ones are good for air.
Make sure that these ones are not inappropriate. We had people texting in on funny commercials earlier. But on a more serious note, there's somebody here, Caroline, saying she's concerned about a technician that came into her house. We were talking about COVID. And saying a technician came into her house and he said if I insisted that he had to wear a mask, it was his right to refuse the job. Caroline says society has taken a sad turn for the worst. I think this is in regards to masking and then the debate that was at the Ottawa-Carleton District School Board meeting. It will not be mandatory. It will be a choice. It'll be up to students. And Mitch, based on the fact that only about 10% of students were masking up to begin with at this board, I don't think we're going to see a big shift. How about you?
I don't think so either. I think it's that deadlock, I think, might be here to stay. It's hard to say, but once you give something to someone, then you take it away, masking, no masking, it's difficult to kind of reinstate that.
Unless people feel guilted into putting it back on. I guess that's a possibility. It was a tie, 6-6, which meant that it couldn't go through. I'm looking through the rest of the text board here. Oh, why don't we end on a fun note? We were talking about inappropriate topics at the family dinner table. And I said fish sex would be on the menu because that's the TED radio hour. They're talking about sex, the sex lives of fish. And I said, well, you know, maybe that would be a good topic for Aunt Betty. Hey, Aunt Betty, do you know how fish have sex? Rob from Beckwith says asking Aunt Betty that question just opens the door for Aunt Betty to start talking about sex life, which would even be more shocking. Another person said Dr. Pimple Popper. Caroline says someone's mental health or their medical condition. These are all good things to stay away from. And we're giving you a pretty good amount of runway here, right? Don't you think, Mitch?
I'd say so.
Before Christmas, yeah.
Yeah, you know, you can start brainstorming, come up with the worst ideas, start a civil war.
Okay, what are the most innocuous topics then? If we've covered the flashpoints, politics, religion, someone's weight or their food choices, their marital status, their decision to have kids or not, or how many kids they have, oh, that might be another one. What are the good topics? The topics that are just easier?
It depends on your family, right?
Okay.
Some families are just so easy to set off that you say the slightest thing like, hey, remember when that time, you know, just a casual reminiscence, and then all of a sudden World War III. So it depends the family, I think. But
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the weather's always safe.
Right. No, it's not, though.
True.
Okay, ready? Let's have a conversation. I'll take it in the direction that pulls it down. Go ahead. Start it off.
What a mild day we're having today.
Yeah, it is really mild lately. Keep going.
The sun is shining, and I can't wait to go for a walk later and really enjoy that
sun.
Yeah,
and all those people tell you it's because of climate change, which isn't real.
Yep, that sounds about right.
See, I just pulled it down.
So it's not even safe. Nothing is safe.
Yeah. How are things up in Ottawa lately? Keep going.
Oh, you know, things
are... these little radio skits I'm making you do?
How are things
up in Ottawa? Oh, they're good, eh? Yeah, well, I think they'll be even better when the Freedom Convoy 2.0 comes back to town in February, and I'll be there. Why don't we visit?
Nothing is safe.
Just anything in 2022 off limits.
Christy Cameron, ruining everything all the time. I'm sure there's got to be something. Puppies? Puppies as a topic of conversation?
Then they'll tell you that kittens are better.
Yeah, well, I bet you got your dog from a puppy mill. Adopt, don't shop. You should be ashamed of yourself. Oh, see, I ruined that one too. Nothing is safe. Nothing is sacred anymore. Aren't you looking forward to some good old-fashioned family time now eventually, Mitch?
Yeah, I can't wait.
Thing I'm looking forward to is Matt Scooby in December. That is his time to throw.
Oh, boy. Matt Scooby is out there today. You know what, actually? Though I think tomorrow we are going to go get our tree, because tomorrow is pretty much the only day that we have available to go and get it. We're booked up every single weekend. It's a really busy time of year. We got our family party down in Etobicoke with my side of the family. We've got another engagement with friends. Got another thing the next weekend, and then it's Christmas. It's too late.
Mm. Are you going to do the shopping? You going to a tree farm or anything, or just
you know, I hadn't quite figured it out. Last year we went to a tree farm. Last year our tree was dead from the get-go. It was highly suspicious. We brought it into the house. It was shedding needles everywhere. And I kept saying to Drake, I don't think it's going to make it till the 25th. It did, but it was a big mess. The year before, it was way better. But last year, we had a tree shortage. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that'll be me tomorrow. Mitch, it has been a pleasure.
Always a pleasure.
Sharing the last 5 hours with you. I feel like we know each other better now.
Yep.
Andy will be back. Yep, he says with a lot of regret in his voice. Yep, we know each other really well.
A harrowing show.
I'm about to run away now. I know you in a way that makes me feel uncomfortable. I know things about you I did not want to know. Stephen Ellsworth, thank you for all of your technical expertise on the board. Mitch, thank you for producing the show. To the listeners, thank you for tuning in. Rosie Etta is here tomorrow. Have a great Saturday.